Welcome to Monkeys.com and Rhino.com's interview with Michael Nesmith. This is Andrew Sandoval, and I had the pleasure of speaking with Michael about a number of current projects in his creative world, including the recently launched online virtual environment VR3D, some of his impending solo catalog CDs due out soon from Demon Records in the UK, as well as Rhino's recently issued 40th anniversary editions of the Monkees albums in mono and stereo. So sit back and enjoy this conversation with musical innovator and video visionary Michael Nesmith.
I don't know, but don't smell like corn silk.
Our chat began with details of VR3D, an offshoot of Nesmith's VideoRanch.com website. This recently launched subscription environment allows users to develop a three-dimensional screen profile in the form of an avatar and to interact with other VR3D subscribers. Activities include live concerts with high-fidelity sound, audience interaction, and three-dimensional musicians, as well as lectures, dance nights, movies, and my favorite, of course, the ability to fly. Here's Nez.
It's a social virtual reality, social in the fact it doesn't have a game quest or any particular effort that needs to be made. You're not in competition with other players in it. You don't need to reach different levels and so forth. It's just purely for hanging out and meeting people and talking and sharing. And of course, the question is, what do you do in there? In there being in the virtual world. So a long time ago, actually in the late 90s, I started looking at ways to program different things in the world. I think a lot of different people have different ideas who run these virtual worlds. Second Life has a sort of hands-off policy. They don't provide any kind of programming in there, and they leave it all to the people who are in Second Life and who build Second Life and so forth. And then there are a few other virtual worlds where there are some programs that are provided by the owners of the world and so forth. What Video Ranch started to become was like a group of venues where there could be live performances of various type, most specifically centered around music and live music performance. So the question was, how do you embed this music in there? You know, do you just play it back so music plays when you go in there with your avatar? And so I've been working on that for a long time, and about a year ago came up with some technology that allowed me to put video inside the world where it's embedded in the world in more or less a seamless way, so that it looks as if the performers are in the world with the avatars. So you can go there to the virtual world, go to the venue, which again is a virtual venue, meet your friends who are all avatars, and watch a live band or a live act perform. And that's what Video Ranch is about. And there's eight venues in there. They're not all active all the time. As a matter of fact, it's kind of slow in there because it's still heavy lifting with the technology and so forth. Most on weekends we have a band that plays in there, a blues band called Ranch Dressing. And then we simulcast some programs in there with a local radio station, local to California. They go up to north of San Francisco and east of Chino, Davis, and then down south to San Luis Obispo, so it's kind of the Northern California area that has KPIG, K-P-I-G, which is also on the net, kpig.com. So we simulcast with them, and this Thursday, Tony Furtado's coming in, and then later on, John Jorgensen and his quintet's coming in, and then later on, James McMurtry's coming in to play, and they come in and with their band, and they come in the studio, and then they do. We embed them in the virtual world and they play. So it's not a lot of programming, but it's enough to keep you interested.
Day passes and a variety of other subscription options are available from VideoRanch.com, which is linked to our new site here, Monkees.com. It has to be seen to be believed. One warning, you will need a very fast computer.
Communication is limited to text chat, so we've got capabilities for voice. We're not using it right now. I'm not 100% sure that's the best way to go. It's like having an audience where everybody was screaming at you with different questions or whatever they wanted. All of that's shaking out as these worlds mature and they get more online. So yeah, that's what you do. You come in, you can ask for a day pass. You email us at vr3d at videoranch.com, and that puts you to the foreman, and then they can either set you up with a day pass, which just gets you in for like a 24-hour period, or you can get register, because it's you can't get in unless you're approved to get in. One of the things about these virtual worlds is that there's issues of security and safety and friendliness and stuff that need to be watched pretty closely. We've learned that over the years. The best way to do it is to keep it kind of focused on people that we know who they are, and so you're not just in there just like walking down a city street somewhere. With a 7-day pass, you register, and then you can buy a monthly subscription or a yearly subscription after that.
Right, and not only do you get to wander around these sort of amazing 3D confines, as it were, but you can fly, and you can do all kinds of great things. You can dance and jump up and down. And
yeah.
It's hard to describe it, though. I think people should really go and check it out.
Yeah, I've never been successful at describing it so that somebody who went in after I told them all about it said, oh, yeah, that's pretty much what I thought it would be. Everybody comes out of there saying, oh, my gosh, I had no idea. It was this cool.
Nesmith himself has DJed within the confines of VR 3D, and the inevitable question is, will we see a return to the live stage, albeit in virtual reality, from Nes himself?
Well, it's entirely possible. I don't know whether I will or not, because I just haven't been performing. I have to say that if I was going to perform, it would probably be the most interesting to me and the most appealing to me to perform in world, because it's simple. It's a great environment for a performer. Stage in Video Ranch Studios, which is up in Northern California, is really set up for beautiful production values, beautiful music production values. There's CD quality audio that goes out over the line, so when people are in world and they hear the music, it sounds just as good as it can sound. The environment is really conducive to focused, high quality performances. So I'm drawn to it as a performer. The question is, am I through performing? And I think I may be. I don't feel too much compulsion to go back out and play much anymore.
Nesmith's most recent musical endeavor was the 12-song 2005 release, Raise.
As you know, being in the record business, it's a different world out there now. We made an initial offering of a couple of hundred signed limited edition CDs, which we sold as art pieces because I didn't really think we'd sell any in the record stores. And in fact, we haven't really sold too many in the record stores. We have a little distributor who sells hard goods, and they continue to order bits and pieces, have for the last year. But I've been very happy with the success that it's had in the digital world. We've sold a lot of downloads on the various sites, and a lot of downloads at Video Ranch. You can download it at Video Ranch too, and so that's all going really well. I guess the best thing I liked about it, though, was the reaction from my musician friends, who I have a lot of respect for over the years. You know, I got some really great letters and great phone calls, and people who have been tremendously supportive and had a lot of really nice things to say. And that always makes you feel good. The respect of your peers is one of the great perks in the creative business.
Nesmith fans can take solace in the news that there are new CDs on the way, at least new CDs of his older records from Demon in the UK. These all feature new liner notes and also a remix of his solo debut album, The Wichita Train Whistle Sings, which was recorded 40 years ago.
Yeah, I guess it is the 40th anniversary of The Wichita Train Whistle.
I may be the only person celebrating that anniversary, but
you may be the only person that knows it, Andrew.
But I'm happy to be waving my flag or my windmill for the American Wichita Production Company.
Yeah, good for you. That's I had forgotten it. We did it like in November. You know, when I made that record, we were really in the eye of the storm by that time, and as far as the Monkees were concerned, and I wasn't getting a lot of opportunity to make music as much as I wanted to. You know, I had always envisioned my life as an artist to be centered around the joy of daily making music, and, you know, in some form or another, performing or recording or something. And but of course, with the Monkees, it was just this monster, this maelstrom of television shows and just all the stuff that surrounds something when it gets that big. And so I didn't have an opportunity to be doing all the music I wanted to, and Wichita was a great opportunity for me to get to do that. So I was happy to do it. I was surprised to see that this myth began a while, and I think you may have even put some of it out there. I know I saw it in Hal Blaine's book that I was, that I had made the record as a tax write-off, which wasn't true. No, I mean, I made the record to make the record. I really wanted to hear it, but I was, and have it out there, but I was, you know, so stuck in that whole Monkees thing at the time, I didn't get to do as much with it as I wanted to. In addition to that, you know, we had, I think it was like 56 pieces or something in that band, and we had four tracks, and nobody quite knew how to mix it. I sure didn't. And so the first release of Wichita was really not well mixed. I didn't like the way it had come out, and I didn't like the way it was sequenced. There was a lot of things about it that were really disappointing to me, even though I was able to make the music. But now, years later, I went back to the original four tracks, put them all across over in Pro Tools, was actually able to get a fairly decent mix off the thing. So I'm really happy that it's coming out now to be close to what I originally had it sounding like. Also, I resequenced it, that was better. I like it. And now I can actually put it on and listen to it, and you can hear these guys playing, you know, that where you couldn't before. It was just sort of mixed so poorly you couldn't make your way through it. But now I'm really happy. I'm going to be interested to see what people think of it now.
The Wichita Train Whistle Sings album was originally issued by Dot Records in 1968. It featured the cream of the crop of L.A.'s first call session musicians, including the legendary Wrecking Crew, the very same musicians who performed with such artists as the Byrds, the Beach Boys, the Mamas and Papas, and just about every other great L.A. record made during the 1960s. One of the most unique recordings on the album is Don't Cry Now, which never appeared on any other record by Michael Nesmith or the Monkees. It was briefly issued as a single, but we've never heard a vocal version of it.
Yeah, there's actually a vocal melody, and there's actually lyric. I can't remember them, and I'm not sure where they are, but it's a real song, but I can't you know, for Wichita, I was just examining melody and the structure of melody and arrangement and so forth, so it was a different aesthetic. That was one of those songs I wrote that at, you know, same, it's out of the same mold of Shelley's and different drum and Nine Times Blue and the stuff that I wrote back at that period of the Troubadour.
Another of Nesmith's hidden nuggets was recently unearthed by the Sundays label in the form of a CD by the group The Penny Arcade. Nesmith sponsored and produced recordings by the group throughout 1967 and 68.
But you know, it was really strange because I was under the impression that those guys were playings and that I had heard them play live in L.A. around, but the guy in Germany who did the liner notes said no, they'd never played live, because, you know, there was a lot of really cool music going on the Strip and around L.A. that had a signature sound to it, and I thought the Penny Arcade really captured it. And when I listened to it, you know, when they sent me the master, I was so surprised to hear that sound of the L.A. streets of 1968. I mean, that's really the way it sounded when you drive down Sunset Boulevard and go by Pandora's Box and listen to the music coming out of those clubs. It was like 6th Street in Austin in the 80s, you know. It was just completely inundated with this music, and that's the way it sounded. I was trying to describe it to somebody the other night, and I started off one night at the Inn down by the Palladium, just a little past Vine there, or whatever that place was, you know, just a little past Vine. Started there and worked my way all the way up through the end of the Strip, and who I saw was Jethro Tull, the Buffalo Springfield, Linda Ronstadt, Chicago, the Byrds, and I think Clapton as kind of a. I don't know. I may have him confused with somebody at that point. But anyway, that was kind of what was going on up and down the Strip during that time, just in different clubs.
Nesmith recalls more happenings from 40 years ago in part two of our interview. So stay tuned to monkees.com and rhino.com for the next installment.